Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to the Thursday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Jim, we've been chronicling this fight in Wisconsin over budgets and collective bargaining for a very long time now, or at least it seems that way. It's been a few weeks. The Democrats from Wisconsin helping the sorry Illinois economy by staying on that side of the border, at least for all their television appearances. But finally, the Wisconsin Republicans had enough of it. The Democratic leader in the state Senate said he didn't want to negotiate anymore. So Republicans said, okay, we'll separate the collective bargaining issue from the budget bill. That means we don't have to have this quorum to pass that. They did. They sent it to a conference committee. And now the House Assembly is going to pass that. And it looks like the Democrats are now scrambling to come back and try to do something about it. But it looks like the Republicans won this, at least legislatively. We'll see about the PR battle. But kudos to the Republicans for figuring out a way to win this, even while the Democrats tried to take their ball and go home.
As of this morning, I was hearing reports that the lawmakers from Wisconsin who were still in Illinois weren't going to come back, which I think might be one of the great accomplishments of Illinois Governor Pat Quinn. He found a bunch of people who don't want to leave Illinois. And you could say, you know, this is probably the most successful tourism effort we've had in my short tenure. There are two ways I think this can turn out winning pretty well for Republicans. And no, that was not a subtle Charlie Sheen joke to say they're winning. The first is this goes into effect. And obviously the state assembly still has to pass it. And there's, you know, a bunch of stuff that could go wrong. But presume this passes. It goes into effect. If non-union households don't see any real impact, they look at this and say, well, what was all that excitement about? I mean, unions clearly will see that their operating system is different. Now, they're not necessarily unionized workers. It's probably much more that the union leaders will find themselves with dramatically limited powers and such. So by the time Scott Walker faces the voters again, this may be seen as a big kerfuffle that people wonder what all the fuss was about, that life in Wisconsin went on more or less the same it did before if you're not in a union household. The other one was that there was some talk, mostly on the fringes of liberal bloggers and such, but the idea of a general strike, which would be effectively every unionized worker everywhere goes on strike in order to protest this. I think that'd be kind of interesting to see. There's a part of me almost wants to say, all right, buddy, let's see them try to turn this country into France or turn this country into Greece.
Right.
I see enormous potential for this to cause a huge backlash. And there's some people who are saying this is a replay of the late 1960s. And, you know, liberals forget that, you know, Richard Nixon won pretty handily in 68 because the country was tired of this kind of thing. So the idea that protests are going to end up being the real winning, you know, the winning move in this, I'm not quite convinced yet. But obviously, even though we're very close to passage, there's still quite a few twists and turns in the road ahead before we know how this plays out politically.
I think you're right. And I think that it once again points to the fact that this is really up to the American people, the people of Wisconsin in this particular case. But as we see this budget impasse playing out in Washington with the Senate rejecting the House spending cuts on Wednesday, us, the American people, are going to determine whether actually getting down to business and trying to get budgets under control is something worth doing and they can get behind it, or whether once the specifics come out, they get queasy and then run back to the status quo. It's up to them. And in the 2010 elections, and so far, I think they seem to be willing to have the stomach for it. But in the long run, that's another story. We'll find out. Jim, on to martini number two now. And it has historically, over the past few weeks, been sponsored by the Middle East. We're back there again. The situation in Libya, clearly, according to recent reports, not going well for the rebels. Gaddafi's loyalists have seemed to have carved out a larger area surrounding his base in Tripoli. They've taken a few of the cities in that area. They seem to have taken over a major oil location, and the rebels seem to be on their heels. On the flip side, diplomatically, it seems like Nicolas Sarkozy is the only one who's actually got any guts here, recognizing the rebels as the legitimate Libyan government and actually talking airstrikes, whether that's the good idea or not. Obama, of course, just wants to have a humble foreign policy and let the UN and the EU determine what to do here, even though if there is any military action, guess who they're probably going to ask to do it. So it might be nice to actually have some say in what that policy could be. Right now, it looks like we're dropping the ball in Libya and dropping it huge.
Yeah, you know what's a humble foreign policy, Greg?
What's that?
Not having a foreign policy. That's very humble. Nothing is exceptionally humble. Very hard to offend anyone when you do nothing. I'm looking over at the Washington Post, and they're noting that on Monday, State Department spokesman P.J. Cowley said an arms embargo that's included in the UN resolution means it's a violation for any country to provide arms to anyone in Libya, which includes the rebels. So right now, by taking a we're taking a non-interventionist stance. We think we're doing something helpful by having an arms embargo, when in fact Gaddafi already has all the guns and planes and you know, tanks and all the stuff that he could ever need up against large numbers of civilians who don't have this and are outgunned. So once you put that in, the other factor is we keep insisting that if we're going to have a no-fly zone, it must be approved by the UN. Well, you know, Russia and China and all the usual obstinate parties are not enthusiastic to see that. So we have a circumstance in which the rules we've set out for ourselves, which include no arms exports and no nothing without UN approval, ensures we will do nothing. And one of the things that I've been thinking about as we kind of, you know, try to chew over this admittedly, you know, challenging foreign policy conundrum is Obama's actions suggest that he sees no vital U.S. interest in toppling Gaddafi's regime. Now, I think there are a lot of folks out there who could dispute that, but if that's really what he thinks, there's a part of me that feels like he should come out and say it. First of all, if he doesn't believe it, that there's a vital U.S. interest, he shouldn't get involved. He shouldn't try to enact a policy that the president doesn't really believe in. And then the flip side of it is, you know, that you shouldn't pretend like there's a chance you might get involved when deep down you know that you're not going to. So, you know, otherwise we just end like we're a tease to the rebels, that we are always, you know, saying that possibly we might get involved, but under the right circumstances, but there is no such thing as the right circumstances. So, you know, as usual, I think it'd be better if Obama just leveled with the American people and leveled with the world about what how he sees the situation, other than kind of look like he's in this, you know, frozen indecision.
Well, on to the third martini now, and obviously the president's not leading on the international stage. He's clearly not leading on the budget situation, given that he's made no serious efforts to reduce spending. So what exactly is the president spending his time on?
If there's one goal of this conference, it's to dispel the myth that bullying is just a harmless rite of passage or an inevitable part of growing up. It's not.
Ah, the White House Summit on Bullying today, Jim, an online conversation with America. And nobody likes bullying. Bullying should be stopped. But is that really the president's job, is to lead the national conversation on bullying?
Well, afterwards, Greg, I understand he's scheduled to go to a DNC fundraiser. Will he talk about the need for Hispanic voters to punish their enemies? it was important to stand up against the hostage takers, but we don't want to bully them. You know, that's the important thing. When I saw this, the first thing that came to mind was Bill Clinton's big, much touted announcement about school uniforms back in 1996. And what happens when presidents go small ball? When they start dealing with these really kind of innocuous, I mean, Greg, are there any pro-bullying lobbying groups out there? Any, you know, he's taking on the big bullying special interest groups. You know, of course we don't want to see kids get bullied, but this is an issue for their teachers and their principals. And you know how this warrants the attention of the commander in chief and the president of the United States. Maybe you could justify this during a time of peace and prosperity. And I went back and I checked. The unemployment rate when Bill Clinton did his big school uniform events was in February 1996. The unemployment rate was 5.5%, and in that month, the U.S. economy created 700,000 jobs. Yes, there was once a time when the economy could create 700,000 jobs in one month. I know it sounds like some sort of utopian lost past. You know, and so if the big things are being taken care of, I think the American people are perfectly fine with the president getting into these kind of touchy-feely, you know, non-traditionally presidential topics that are kind of more of the topic of an Oprah episode, in which you can be the healer-in-chief, et cetera. But, you know, look, we're still in year three of a recession. Yes, technically unemployment is 8.9%, but it's only because we've driven so many folks out of the workforce. You know, we have this Libya situation we talked about earlier. We've got the state of Wisconsin, you know, basically being shut down by protesters. All these states are facing massive deficits. The national deficit is raging out of control. You know, at this point, it looks like a president who can't deal with anything on any of those big topics. So he's focusing on this small, innocuous topic in order to feel useful and relevant and like a serious problem solver, since he's proving to not be one on front after front.
The strategy he's used on every issue, though, and you mentioned this before about there being no pro-bullying lobby, who does he demonize here? He can't demonize parents, really. He can't go after public school educators because obviously he's got to defend the folks in Wisconsin and the, you know, the big labor he needs to really get his campaign going door to door in 2012. So who's the bad people here other than the bullies, and how does he go after them?
Well, Greg, he did mention that he hinted that he had been bullied as a school kid himself. Now, I just had this come across the wires. The U.S. has declared war on Iggy Fenton, who is a resident of Hawaii. He's 49 years old. No explanation of why, but he's declared an enemy of the state, and all military force is being brought to bear to to, it just says to get him back with no specification of what that is. So I exaggerate. You know, look, maybe this is therapy for the president. Maybe he feels bullied. Maybe he feels powerless in dealing with all these terrible problems. You know, maybe his heart genuinely is in the right place. And it's, you know, I don't know how many kids there are in the world who weren't bullied. The idea that this requires some sort of federal government response just kind of seems like almost a parody of the, you know, liberal nanny state mentality. But, you know, maybe Obama needs this. Maybe he's working something out, Greg.
I guess so. We're not making fun of, kids who have suffered really bullying, but the fact that Obama's taking time to deal with this and that he's going to have the specific answers is utterly ridiculous. Jim, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg. See ya.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Friday for the next Three Martini Lunch.